seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shore of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark nearly 10 hours ago. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears.
Hello, welcome back to Extra Feature Interview, take two. I have to apologize to our guest, David Cicito, tonight. My GarageBand decided not to record for some reason. So we're going to take this two. We have Lady Belladonna's Nightshade. Hit it, Dave. You can start again. I'm so sorry.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you again for having me. And I don't mind. I have been interviewing people for over 30 years now. I've had some of the worst glitches you can imagine. So this is nothing, believe me. Nothing.
I'm just glad I noticed partway through them. Like, this is not, something's not working right. I just set this up too, and I tried it out. I said, okay, it's all working before I got here. We're good to go. So let's start again. What are you doing with your film?
I'm sorry?
You're putting it on VOD, and we're going back to where we were because we got to start at the beginning again. So I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Lady Belladonna's Nightshades is a feature-length anthology. We have it right now available on VOD platforms and on DVD. The best place to find it in Canada is on our website, which is borderlandsmedia.com. And it's available there for streaming or rental, whatever. I'm not really sure. I didn't set it up, but that's where it can be found.
That's perfect. I know we've discussed this before, but we get to do it again. Where do you find your actors and the casting process?
Okay. Well, the main character, Lady Belladonna, we had a rather lengthy audition process. We knew that we wanted to find somebody who completely personified the character. And we had actresses from all across the state. We live here in New Mexico. And we also had actresses from basically all across the country. We had some from California. We had some from New York. We had a couple from Chicago. And most of them sent in their auditions basically like we're doing this here via Skype. Or they would send us recordings, which is really cool. It's the first time I'd ever gone that route before. But in the end, we wound up casting a local actress, somebody who lives right here in our town. And that wasn't because we wanted somebody local so much as Tanya really personified the character. She was a little bit older than we were expecting, than we were receiving. Most of the actresses were in their 20s. A lot of them were very pretty. Well, they were all pretty, but some of them were gorgeous. Many of them dressed up in costumes for their auditions and stuff, but they all came across sort of as neophytes. Oh. You know, you could not imagine them as being these all-powerful, really super sexy, but ultimately all-powerful demons. And then Tanya walked in, and she just knocked it out of the ballpark. We actually interviewed her. We auditioned her 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Mainly because our producer was not entirely sure. He had in his mind someone younger and someone, you know, like the women that we had been interviewing. And, you know, I argued that, no, I really think we should see her again. So we brought her in a second time. And again, she just knocked it out of the ballpark. And really what it came down to was sitting down with her and really exploring what it meant to be Lady Belladonna. She had all the right answers. She knew exactly what we were looking for. And without batting an eyelash, she basically said, I'm your girl.
That's
fine. So there it is. We got her.
Something we didn't get into earlier, I would have gotten into. The costuming. Who did her costuming?
Local costumer, Autumn Gieb. She does a lot of work for the theater companies here. There are several. She is very well known in the theater community here. She made all the costumes by hand.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's amazing. And we're very lucky to have her. I've actually worked with her on all of my films. Well, that's not true. I worked with her on other projects. She worked, she was my costumer on Perfect. And then I brought her over to Lady Belladonna's Nightshades.
I thought you, okay, so when you were filming the scene, did you film Lady Belladonna, did you film the Lady Belladonna, was you? The opening scene?
Yes, I wrote it and directed it.
Okay, you did that, you also did your short, which we'll get into later.
Yes.
Okay, let's discuss the other guy, her helper, her minion, I guess?
Addy, yes. Addy was played by Donnie Procise. He is a local actor here. He does a lot of theater, and he was in the three shorts that I did before this. He's also my partner. We've been together for almost 10 years now. But he's an amazing actor, and I live with him, so it makes it very easy for me to write roles for him. The thing is, every single role I've written has been different, and I wasn't entirely sure he was going to go for Addy, because it meant having to wear high heels and a corset and lederhosen, and I really wasn't sure if he'd go for that, because he'd never done anything like that before, but, you know, he's game for anything, so I think he did a wonderful job.
He walked well in the heels. I don't think I could walk in heels. I mean, I did watch him going, I can't do that. I mean, I don't know if I could dress up in costume, but the heels, I was like, okay.
Hey, tell you something. There are some behind-the-scenes shots of Tanya teaching him how to walk in heels
that are good.
Pretty hilarious.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. So I was like, how do you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, she had to walk him through it. And she had to teach him how to get down on the floor without falling over.
I'm sure there's some cuts where he falls over. I'm sure that would have happened if I'd seen them.
Well, actually, he took to it very well. I mean, he would never put them back on again. unless we can get it picked up as a series, which is something we're really hoping for.
I could see that. I definitely could see that in the European market. Definitely, more than over here, but yes, definitely, for sure.
Well, yeah, they love us in Europe. We've gotten a lot of really great response from the European market. Scream Magazine out of Europe has been, they've been very helpful. I mean, we've run ads in their magazine, and they're doing a review, and they keep sending us information on different film festivals and telling us how much people are loving it. And that's
awesome.
It's very cool for an independent film. That's very, very cool.
Are you looking at a follow up for this then, or something different for your next film?
Well, you know, all along, and this is something that early on we talked about, the whole idea behind doing this film was as a pilot.
Okay.
We really would like to see these characters continue. I've got hundreds of ideas for these characters, and several more characters that could be added as well. Ultimately, I'd like to do something like Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is basically, but with short films. So it's still an anthology. It still have the different shorts, but it would always have an arc and a story for the characters to follow.
I think that's great. I think you definitely have a template to do what you're telling me you want to do. I can see that.
Yeah, we...
Just by the first film you brought out. And thank you for reaching out to me to watch it. I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm glad. I should probably mention Jack Lutz, because he's the third actor.
I would have gone there. Cupid.
He plays Cupid, and he is... Locally, he's a radio DJ, which you can probably tell from his voice.
Absolutely.
He's quite the personality, too, which I'm sure you picked up on. That's really Jack. Honestly, when I was writing it, I kind of had him in mind, but I wasn't really sure if he would go for it. Originally, I had him in a diaper. I was, you know, because he's Cupid. But it was Autumn, our customer, who said, maybe not the diaper. It'll look like he's wearing Depends. How about instead if we put him in some sexy briefs or something? And I thought, oh, all right. It worked.
Okay, that brings me back to the end of your film when he's sitting there by himself waiting for his surprise. Was that – I loved the credits. You just keep cutting back to him, cutting back. I couldn't stop laughing. I thought that was perfect.
Well, you know, honestly, that – we came up with that on the fly. We were actually shooting his scenes. Actually, we were getting ready to shoot his scenes. Tanya was in makeup because she was changing into the new wig and stuff and the new costume. And we were waiting. He was waiting in the wings. And I think it was our cameraman who came up with the idea of having him waiting in the waiting room because he was sitting back there reading a newspaper in this stark little hallway. And we thought, he said, come look at this. I think this would be really cool for us to use somewhere. And we just kind of came up with it on the fly and decided at that point, we'll run this over the credits. So it happened kind of organically, but it worked.
Perfect. Absolutely made me laugh.
And, you know, he's, like I said, he's game for anything. Once he knew the cameras were going to be rolling, he gave us all kinds of shtick. We have probably 45 minutes worth of stuff of him just sitting there doing shtick. Yeah.
So something was on the extras.
Yeah, it was not easy culling it down to three different little scenes. But yeah, it worked.
Worked perfectly for me. I know we've went over this before just because I want to get into our listeners. The mood lighting we've discussed earlier, obviously, but let's go into it again.
The mood lighting, I have a really wonderful DP. My director of photography, Kent Harkey, he worked on my first two short films. He's a filmmaker here. I met him as a film student, and he is just finishing up his degree now. He had stopped for a while, and then he went back to get his degree. But he's probably one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to filmmaking. I mean, he knows everything there is to know about cameras and lighting. We sat down and we talked about what we kind of wanted. Now, I was going for a certain feel. I was going for a kind of late 70s, early 80s schlock cable late night feel.
I got that. I definitely took that from this.
That's what I wanted. So we used a lot of gels and we had a fog machine, which kind of the fog machine, rather than give – because, I mean, we really pumped that stuff out. It wasn't to give – an atmosphere like, look, there's fog. It was to kind of give it a grainy pixelated look, which made the digital film look more like old film. Honestly, he explained the whole thing to me and I don't really understand it myself, but it worked and I'm happy about that.
That's fine.
Comes to stuff like this, I leave it to the experts.
That's great. I just sort of want to go back to the first one because I thought it was fascinating, our conversation about the sound effects.
Yeah. The sound effects for that film, Troy Skelton, who wrote and directed, that was his very first film. His dad, who was the executive producer on that film, is a sound guy. It's what he used to be in a band. And he is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, way back, a blues band. So he plays several instruments and he's always playing with sounds and stuff, but he kind of took what Troy had done and just started layering all these sounds on it to the point where his son, Troy Jr. was telling him, that might be a bit much, Dad, but honestly, mm-mm. I have watched this film so many times and every time I do, I hear different things. And I work with him now. I work with Troy. He was our producer on Lady Belladonna as well. And, you know, I've learned so much about sound from watching him layer stuff that now I'm really intrigued by that myself. I kind of start thinking in terms of what kind of sounds can we use. And then of course I have an expert right there that I can ask. So it all works out for the best.
That's great. Back to the one you shot, the short two, Perfect, I think you said it was, or
yes, Perfect.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I am listening. where did the game night idea come from? Like, that's just a general – it's game. I love that opening scene because I had no idea where you were going. That's just something that just occurred to you. Let's go with game. I like that, though. I like where it came from. I like he was the perfect husband. He has to clean out the closet because it looked like it was a game night. I understand he's afraid of the closet.
Yeah, and it was really – it was sort of a riff on sort of a 1950s suburban housewife thing. I wanted her to be so much the housewife that, you know, you would never imagine her having any other job. You know, she's the kind of housewife that wears pearls while she's doing dishes.
Yes. You totally hit that out of the park. I've totally got that.
And, you know, him, we wanted him to be the guy that you would see wearing a sweater vest and smoking a pipe.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, we're on the same page here. I love it.
We wanted the perfect suburban couple so that when the house intruder comes and everything starts shifting around, you think that she's in real danger. She's, you know, her perfect life has just been completely shattered. And then you find out that it maybe isn't as perfect as she would like us to believe.
I love your taking out scene of the villain in that one. I love that. I thought that was really good. I'd never seen that. I'm like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And like I said, I really enjoyed your second short.
Well, you know, and giving credit where it's due, we knew that she was going to take him out, but we had working with us at the time on our set, Johnny Tabor, who is another local filmmaker. Actually, he's done a lot of bigger stuff. He did Frankenstein versus the Mummy. He's got a lot of things out on Netflix, and I mean, he's a much bigger name here than I will ever be. He happened to be on set with us. He was taking photographs for us, and we were blocking that scene and trying to figure out how best to do it. He's the one who came up with that. He's the one who came up with, okay, we'll do this, and we'll do this. And we knew that the knives were going to go into his eyes. We knew that because we had built the mask around that.
Aha, uh-huh, that's how it was done. That was good. I'm not really great at that kind of, I'm like, that's how you did it. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we had two different masks, one that he wore and one that we had made for this. But we didn't know how it was going to happen. We really didn't. And it was Johnny who basically came up with that whole thing. So credit where it's due. You know, it takes another great filmmaker to help us reach those moments.
Okay, now we'll get to your third short. The wake-up call, I called it. I don't know if that was the right name of it, but that's what I wrote down in my notes.
That's the one, yes. That's the title.
I'm not really sure where – I'm not sure I understood this one. If you could walk me through it a bit.
You know, I had the same problem.
Okay.
I did.
I didn't hate it. I'm just like, I don't think I got it.
Well, you know, initially we didn't accept it for the anthology. Initially we turned it down because we weren't sure it was clear enough what happens.
I don't. I can tell you I don't know what happened.
And talking to the filmmaker, talking to Sheridan, he basically told us that was the point.
Oh,
he
said, okay, good. Okay, I feel better then.
He said, you know, the guy goes in. First of all, everybody says it. I've even said it. Why would he go into the bathroom? Why wouldn't he just run back into his room? But, I mean, you know, that aside, he makes the mistake of stepping into the bathroom.
Yes.
The guy comes back for his keys, sees the door open, and realizes that someone has come through and goes into the bathroom. So at the end, when the phone is ringing and, you know, the camera is moving around, it's all in the sound effects.
Yes.
You know, you can hear the water and the curtain and, yes, and the guy grunting and... I guess he intended – no, I don't guess. He said this. He intended it to be left to the minds of the viewers and, you know, with the hopes that people wouldn't think that it was, you know, that the guy was getting off lightly, obviously. I don't know. I don't know,
okay.
Honestly.
That's why I'm asking you. I just kind of go, I should ask him. I don't understand this that well, so I'm going to ask what I didn't get. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, we included it because it fit with the whole theme.
Oh, I think it did. I just was confused. That was all. I was like, where? Okay, so I have to make my own decision. I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of buildup.
Yes.
It's a lot of buildup for something that you never see.
I think I like to see when you show the hotel guy having to call everybody. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that scene a lot.
And Sheridan is, I mean, I know him. I don't know him well. He was a student here. He has since graduated, and he's now making films up in Albuquerque, doing very well for himself. Actually, he and several of our local filmmakers who I do know personally all work together, and that's how I came to find both that film and Wolf's Law was through his producers. Keegan Carnes in particular, he's a good friend, and he was a producer on Wolf's Law, and through that, we also acquired Wake Up Call.
Well, that's great. I think, like I said, I really enjoyed the package you sent me. I quite enjoyed the film.
I'm really glad I had fun with it.
I love talking to you because I have questions. And you know, when you watch a Hollywood film, like you said, you work for, I have no way to ask.
Right.
Like, why did you choose this? Why did you choose that? Because I have these questions. I watch a lot of film. So I look.
You know, it's interesting. I worked for Paramount and actually all the studios for about 15 years from the early 90s through, you know, the first part of this century, which sounds really weird when you say it. But, and I worked on a lot of pretty big films. So I had the opportunity to talk to not just the actors, but the directors and producers and like everybody. Everybody who did everything. And they're not really as forthcoming as independent filmmakers.
I know. I agree with you because I've tried talking to people. I just sort of I'm nobody. I know that. They blow me off.
Yeah.
And that's not interesting to me. So I'd rather talk to you about your film.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested. Like, what's the process? How do you get here? What's your budget? Do you, you know, location,
well,
stuff
too,
like that?
You know, it's whenever you're working with a Hollywood film, it's just big money comes down and they hire all the people and they do their jobs.
Yeah.
And so it is union. And, you know, there's a story there, but it's pretty much the same story. When it comes to independent film, however, no two are the same.
I know. I love it.
Ever. No two are ever the same. You have problems that you do not anticipate and you have to really think on your feet. And I'll be really honest, having worked in the industry and having worked on larger films, I much prefer independent films, small films. I love the people and I love having to think on our feet. I love the fact that we have to be creative with what little money we have and everybody gets a chance to put in their input, to be creative and use their ingenuity to help us overcome things. I mean, some of the stuff that our camera operators and director of photography come up with just to get a scene are fascinating to me. Fascinating to me. I love watching these kids work. I love it. I just love it. I will never stop loving it.
That's awesome. I just have a couple quick questions for you.
So, okay.
Before we wrap up. And these are the easy questions.
Okay.
Favorite film of all time and why?
Okay. My favorite film of all time is Blade Runner.
Okay.
And I would say probably Longevity. I saw it in theaters when it first came out. I have watched all of the incarnations since. I still love the original theatrical version.
It's about seven, isn't it? Seven different cuts of Blade Runner, isn't there? There's a lot.
Yeah. And counting.
Yes.
I still always go back to the theatrical version. I love the voiceover because I love that noir element.
Oh, absolutely.
That it was a throwback to Dashiell Hammett.
Yep.
And you know that it had that gritty feel, but the voiceover added something for me. When they took it out, I didn't understand it. And
no,
I've had this conversation with so many people. But beyond that, to me it's a perfect movie because all of the characters, all of the actors, everything about it is so well realized that you never for one minute think that it's not real.
Oh,
now,
I
we're
agree.
Talking a movie that was made in, 1980?
Yeah, I mean,
and
yeah.
The special effects still hold up.
Oh, I agree. I think I love that movie. I think it's a great film. Now, I have another question. It's very similar, but not quite the same.
Okay.
Favorite fun film to watch?
Favorite fun film? Dazed and Confused.
There you go. See, that's I like asking both questions because I mean we all have our favorite fun. Dazed and Confused. It's out. That
it's
does not get
pleasure.
Old at all. That film.
I love it. It's a guilty pleasure. Again, I love all of the characters. I love all of the actors. I feel like it was perfectly cast for its time.
Yeah.
And you know, originally the reason I really loved that movie is because I was the age of the younger characters. At the time. So the young kid that is basically the focal point, I was his age. I was in 1976, I was going into high school. And, you know, we went through all of that. We went through the the torture, I guess, and it brought back a lot of memories. I thought that Richard Linklater did an amazing job in capturing that 20 years later, and I just feel like it's held up. I can still sit down and watch it all the way through and laugh in all the right places.
That's great.
And, you know, I had the opportunity to work with Rory Cochrane.
Ooh.
Years later. He played Slater, and, you know, this was probably 15 years. No, it was more like 10 years after the film, and he still at that time was saying it was his best, his most favorite role.
Oh, wow.
And he couldn't really explain why, because he felt like he was such a neophyte at the time, but he felt it was his most most precise role. Like, that characterization was so dead on that people still call him Slater when they run into him. It's become iconic. So I don't know if he just got really lucky or if he's just really that good, but for him to admit that it's still his favorite too, that sort of goes along with my guilty pleasure.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for your time and good luck on your film and any future endeavors. I'd love to watch them.
We've got all kinds of stuff coming up, and I would very happily send you information.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And I'm sorry if I talk too much. I have a tendency to do that.
I absolutely love it.
Well, good. Thank you, Simon.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great night.
I will. You too. Okay. Thank you so much.